Hi, I'm Jennifer Ackerman-Haywood, and you're listening to the Craft Sanity Podcast, an interview show all about art, craft, and creativity. This episode of the podcast is sponsored by Gay Abandon, maker of Body Parts Winter Accessories. Gay and her friend Melanie make a range of arm warmers, wrist warmers, necklace scarves, and midriff warmers that you can order over at gayabandon.etsy.com. Okay, so let's get to it, folks. It's time to craft sanity. Well, I'm really happy to be back at the mic here. I have to tell you, a lot has happened since my last podcast, and I'll get into that in the after show. But I'm doing well, and I am excited to bring you a really fun interview with Yvette Van Boven. She is the author of Homemade, which is a really awesome cookbook that was translated and published by Stuart Taborian Ching here in the United States. And it just came out, I believe it's been out for about a few months. It's Homemade, two words, the ultimate DIY cookbook featuring over 200 from-scratch recipes, and it is gorgeous. And I heard about this book and thought, you know what, I want to find out, you know, what all the buzz is about here. So requested a review copy, was not disappointed. I like this book so much, I bought my mother a copy for her birthday. You're probably wondering, like, what's up, Jennifer? Have you lost your mind? This isn't a cooking show. No, I know it's not a cooking show, but I have been doing a lot more cooking. I will say that. We actually are going to be talking about art and the creative process because Yvette actually illustrated the book and illustrates a lot of her recipes that she writes for magazines. She lives over in Amsterdam and also spends some time in Paris. In her professional life, she's also a restaurant owner, and she illustrates recipes and does paper cuts that are food-related. And so she does a lot of photo styling and of food, and then she does these really lovely paper cuts. Homemade just came out in the United States. It came out about a year ago where she lives, and she's already got two other books. One just was published, and another is on the way. So she's been very busy. Yvette is also featured in the winter issue of Craft Sanity magazine, and I did a Q&A with her, so you'll find out more information about Yvette in the winter issue of Craft Sanity magazine. There's also an illustrated recipe for homemade peanut butter and her recipe for sticky cinnamon scrolls, which I think we're going to make those on Christmas Day here. We've already made them once, but I think we're going to do it again around the holidays. So, yeah, so let's get on to that interview, and then I'll fill you in on everything else that's been going on after we're done. And why don't you tell us all where you are right now? Because I know you divide your time between Amsterdam and Paris.
Yes, yes, I do. And I'm actually going back to Paris for the day after tomorrow. But yes, I'm in Amsterdam right now.
That's where you grew up? Is that where you're from?
No, I didn't grow up here. I grew up in Ireland. And I moved back to Holland when I was about 10 years old. My mum and dad are Dutch, but they decided when they were married that they wanted to do something else. So they moved to Ireland, and they had me, and then they had my sister. And after about 10 years, they moved back to Holland again. So I grew up in Ireland, and then we moved to a city quite near Amsterdam, actually. And I've been all over the place after that. When I finished my high school, I went to Belgium first, to Antwerp, to the School of the Arts. And then I found out that I was not really a big artist kind of person, but more I don't know the exact words for that in English. It's more that I'd like to, you know, work around things that I have boundaries or something, like if a piece of paper could be as big as the universe, I would never know what to do with it. And if somebody would tell me, this is the piece of paper you'll have to do it on, it's much easier for me. I don't know why that is, but so I decided to do interior architecture in the School of the Arts in The Hague, that is in the south of Holland. Mm-hmm. So I finished that, and then I moved to Amsterdam. So that's where I'm now. And I since about 5 years now, I think 4 or 5 years, we've been moving up and down to Paris so regularly. It's because my life here in Amsterdam is so busy. I do so many things. Sometimes I get you know, completely dizzy of all the things I do. And then when I go to Paris, it's, I don't know, I've got my own place there. I've got my own working tables and internet is there. So you can just, you know, can still work from home, but you can, you know, focus a bit more, I think. And you get inspired also very much.
Well, yeah, I think it's probably good to have a change of venue every so often.
It's very, yeah, it's absolutely inspiring to travel and see other things, not always to see all the same things every day. Yeah.
Well, and that comes through in your work, too. I think the fact that you are pretty global in your experience, especially for art and food. I mean, all that really can inform your work. And I'm sure that's inspired you, not only with your artwork, but with what you're eating and what you're serving other people.
Yeah.
I know in the United States, we only have the benefit of seeing one of your books. Are you on to book three now?
I was busy typing just when you called. Yeah.
So we have Homemade, the ultimate DIY cookbook featuring over 200 from scratch recipes. It's absolutely fabulous. And this just came out in the U.S. and it's just such a fun book. I mean, it's the photographs are lovely. And I love how you have step-by-step instructions for several things in this book, and then also you have put your own artwork, your paper cuts in here, and also your own illustrations, which is really makes it a very interesting book. And I love the dialogue that you establish with the reader, because I this isn't just a book you pick up to figure out what you're going to make for dinner, but it's fun to read what you have to say to people, like kind of cheering us on, like we can do this, you know.
Yes.
And I had read some very flattering things about your book, and so I thought, you know, I want to try this out. So you know, I got a copy of this, and I have to say right away I started making things from it, and
really?
I really have enjoyed it. So congratulations on an excellent book.
Thank you.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about what led up to the making of this first book, and then we'll talk about some of your more current projects after that.
It was something I really wanted to do for a very long time, longer than I can remember, actually. So I saved up recipes, and so we sometimes took pictures, because my husband is the photographer in the book. So that was, you know, because we lived together for such a long time. We took pictures whenever we were in the south of France, where we are very often, or when we were on holidays, you know, in Ireland or whatever, you know, and we always kept them in a box, something like, well, someday we'll use them. And, the restaurant, I had the restaurant running, and that went really well. So I decided I could take some time off and, really put myself to it. And
that's, if I can interrupt you for just a second, let's back up and tell people, because we established that you're an artist, but I didn't do my job. I didn't do my job to help you establish that you have a restaurant. So if you can tell people how you got from the art to the restaurant.
Well, when I finished art school, and I was an interior architect, and I worked as a designer after that, because that was what I was supposed to do. During the time that I was studying all these schools of the arts, which was a pretty long time because I did two schools after another, I worked as a cook in restaurants. I just started off very low in the kitchen, just peeling, you know, onions and stuff like that. And then after a little while, I was allowed to do more because I liked it so much. And I loved cooking as a very small child already. So that was a very, you know, like a sort of hobby or something, you know. I never thought of you know, actually doing it as a job. I was always, you know, my parents always said, yeah, go to art school and go painting and blah blah blah. So I never got that idea. So I worked in restaurants beside my study. When I finished school, I started a little design office with my sister, who was also a designer, and we worked together for 5 years. But I began to miss cooking so much that because my husband, or at that time my boyfriend, is a photographer, he introduced me into this whole world of photography, and I could, you know, fix plates for photos and stuff like that. He you know, gave me a little entrance there, and then I could start off, and I did this as a sort of sidekick job beside my designing work. I worked as a food stylist for many magazines, and if you get into that job, you know, it's like, I don't know, like a snowball. If you do your job probably well, I don't know, you get to do more and more work. So I loved it so much, and I traded my jobs. Yeah. And then when I worked as a food stylist and I opened my own catering service, I did that for a few years. And then my cousin came to help me out so many times because the catering service was growing also. I couldn't do everything by myself. And so we opened a restaurant. First, it was only on breakfast and lunch, and now we have changed it to an evening restaurant even. So we've got a lot of people working. Yeah.
That's
so
awesome.
That's how I came there, yeah.
And where's your restaurant located, and what is it called?
Here in Amsterdam. It's here in Amsterdam, yeah.
And what is the name of your restaurant?
It's called Aan de Amstel, which means near the Amstel River, and it looks over the Amstel River. It's not a canal, but it's one of the rivers running through, there's only one river running through Amsterdam, and the other ones are all canals, as you may know from pictures, or I don't know if you've ever been here.
I have not been there. I'm like a complete opposite of you. I'm such a homebody, it's ridiculous. So now we know the whole story here of how you have this art background and also lifelong appreciation for recipes and good food and cooking. And So when you got all these food styling jobs and you guys started, did you and your husband start taking pictures of the things you were cooking about the same time? Or how long ago did that start, that you were photographing foods you were making?
No, we actually only do that for the book because he's actually more a fashion photographer and advertorial. He does more advertising work.
Okay.
And I do not often work with him actually, but this was it was only logical for us to work together on this project because it came so much from us too. You know, we could talk about the book in bed or waking up and saying, "Oh, we should make this. We should put this in the book." And so I jotted everything down we've got a huge amount of cookbooks here and a lot of favorites and a lot of photography that we liked. So we could talk about the photography and how it should look and how doable all the recipes must be and all those kind of things. So that's something that you can share together also. So it was not something I had to do and tell the publisher, I need a photographer who understands me or anything. And so this grew more than that. It was a sort of idea or something. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, and I think it makes sense to have a partner that knows your work, you can work together. And
exactly.
And food is such it's one of those things where if you can, if it's the food, did you find that often it was, you were photographing the food you were going to eat for dinner that day? Or were you making this specifically to have a photo shoot?
Oh, well, at first we did that, but then we ran out of time. So you have to cluster things.
Yes, so you're making five dinners in one day as opposed to one.
We made over 600 pictures for the book, so in the end, it's not an every evening one dinner
thing. Right.
So we had to, but we had a lot of people over in the time cooking for the book. I often call people and say, "I'm cooking today. You should come over and eat it all up," because I make, you know, I try to make all these kinds of different things, like cakes and something hearty and something savory and something, you know, so that everybody can eat it all up at the end and finish it, because I will be stuck with all these leftovers. It would be a waste, wouldn't it?
Right. Well, it sounds like it's very nice to have you as a friend. So people eat well around you, it sounds like.
Yes, I feed them well. I do.
And so your approach for the people, and I'll be posting some, I'll post a photo, and there's also information in the magazine about your book that has been released in the United States. But why don't you describe a little bit about what makes your book different than a lot of other cookbooks out there? What were you trying to accomplish when you set out to make a cookbook?
A long time ago, I think about 10 years ago or something, I gave a food course, you know, courses or...
You taught a class?
And cooking. And I found out that people knew so little about cooking. You know, they could make a basic pasta, but that was about it. And that's why I tried to be encouraging. And also show people in little pictures, that's our little step-by-step things, you know, how the job is done. Because when I was small and I loved to cook very much, my mom had all these cookbooks which had all these step-by-step things. And that was the way I learned cooking. You know, I knew that the consistency of a crème anglaise was like a thin yogurt because the picture showed it. And, you know, and if you if you tell all these things, you see all these words, and if you want to make something quickly, you're more encouraged to do things if it's on a photo, I think, sort of step by step. So that is sort of a way I wanted to, you know, show people that things are not hard at all, and that they don't have to be intimidated by, I don't have all these appliances, or I need all these ingredients, I don't know. I try to be as accessible as I could be, and also to do that, I wanted to make every, if you turn the page, it would, that it would, every time it would be a sort of a surprise, like, so you always wanted to turn the next page, so like, oh, it's a cutout, oh, it's a drawing, oh, it's a step-by-step recipe, and, you know, just to keep surprising people to, you know, keep reading the book. But that's actually the way I liked books when I was smaller, and I think that people never grow up, and not really in that way, and like to have this kind of surprises, and it works, I think. I mean,
I think it does, because I know I was paging through, and I think I got to I don't know what page it is in this, where you appear to be in a, I think this, I'm assuming this is you, in a meatpacking facility.
Yes, that's me.
I'm kind of afraid to ask what part of
it's his tail. It's his tail.
Oh, it's his tail. I'm like, oh my goodness, because it's and I was quite surprised when I saw that the photo, because you're not expecting, you know, you're kind of just paging along, and there you are. Now, how did you end up getting into a meatpacking facility?
That's actually a nice story, because we were invited by my publisher long before I started off to doing this book to come to the book launch of Stéphane Reynaud. I don't know if you know him. He's a French chef, and he has done many nice books. I think they're very well sold in America too. And I was very, very fond of him. And I got an invitation to go over to Paris to the book launch. And I said, of course, I said yes. And we had a sort of walk through Rungis. And Rungis is the wholesale food market of Paris. And it's not very easy to get in there if you don't have a pass. And Stéphane himself would you know, show us around, mm-hmm. and we were allowed to go into all these food halls that I have never seen so much food before in my life. It was it's a point where all the food has been brought together, and then they did put the prices on it. You know, they can compare it, everything, and then it's all distributed through all of Europe. So you can imagine it is huge. So this was a hall with only cows. There were so many of them, and we were walking a bit behind. And Ove said, "Just run off to one of them," and he took the picture, and we had a. A huge laugh, and it was a really nice picture, and I thought, oh, well, the heck, I'll just put it in my book.
Well, no, and I think that's one of the things that's very fun about your book, is that things are very, it's not like, okay, this is real serious business here, we're going to cook, you know, and yeah. I mean, it's not boring, and I think that there's where a lot of cookbooks fall down on the job, like they're not as interesting, is when if I pick up a cookbook, and it has absolutely no pictures or illustrations at all, you know, it's like I kind of have to will myself to, like, read it, because it could be a very nice cookbook. It could be very great recipes. But at the same time, I like to be able to see, okay, what does that finished dish look like? Does it look appetizing? Does it look like something I'd want to eat?
Yeah.
And I think that, especially if you're cooking something you have never made before.
Before,
and you have no idea what consistency the soup's supposed to have or what you're... It just... So your approach is wonderful. And I have to tell you, my daughter and I, the first thing we tackled was making cheese, because it had been on my list for a long time of things I wanted to do. And a lot of recipes that I had found in the past, like one they were saying you have to go online and order some special stuff from the special cheese making place.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, that just seems ridiculous. Like, they used to make cheese back in the day before the internet, and you couldn't get online and order. So, I love the step-by-step, and my daughter, she was 5 at the time, she's since turned 6, but she was able to, I had her looking at the directions, because she likes to help me cook, and she was looking, and she said, Mom, okay, you know, and I'm kind of going along, and she said, Mom, you're skipping a step, and so she's looking at the pictures, and I think this really made her feel very proud, that she was able to look at the pictures and help me, you know, determine what was the next step. And so this was even accessible, you know, to a child that is in kindergarten and, you know, wanted to kind of help her mom make cheese. And then we tried the cheese and were very pleasantly surprised. And not to say I doubted your recipe. I doubted my cheese making skills, not your recipe. But we were very pleased because it turned out very nice. And now we're planning to do some, like, mix some herbs in and do some fancier things.
Yes, yes, that's exactly the idea. If you get the basic idea from it and you get enthusiastic, then you can do your own things and, you know, adjust it to your own taste and to your own ideas. And that's what I try to tell everyone, you know, be creative and please, you know, make your own recipes from it.
It's just really struck me right away as somebody that, I mean, I did not grow up in a we didn't eat a lot of exotic things, you know. We had like the same you know, meals like that were kind of repeated, and I mean I didn't have a big problem with that. I mean, it was just the way we were, you know, we grew up, and the thing is, I grew up then to kind of do the same thing for my family, where I was repeating some of the same kind of boring foods. And I think it's a lot more interesting when you know your way around the kitchen and can actually make a meal that is really satisfying. It's a great sense of satisfaction too, to be able to make something that's really interesting for your family to eat. So, so thank you for,
you're welcome.
The approach. I mean, cause I just think it's really, it's an empowering approach that you've taken. You really make people feel like they can do this. And is a huge thing. Yeah, and because I think a lot of times people, I talked to this woman about, you know, I was saying something about, I got into a conversation with a woman at an art show, and somehow we got talking about cheese, and I said, oh yeah, I just learned how to make cheese, and I was telling her about your book, you know, and she's like, oh, well, I'm going to take a class, it's like an all-day-long class, and it was like super expensive. And I'm like, oh, really? I said, well, you know, I just got this book, and the book was like a fraction of the class cost. And I said, you know, this, I mean, just so you know, I mean, this is a great reference. But it's just really funny because I think a lot of times people think with cheese and things they don't normally make on a daily basis, they think that they need they need to go to a class, they got to order something online, or they got to get a kit. And the fact that you've just been able to break this all down is really wonderful. So, What kind of feedback have you gotten? I mean, obviously to have this, it came out in Dutch first, I understand.
Yeah.
And then, were you approached by an American publisher, or how did you actually get your book then to be published in the United States?
Every year there is a book, I don't know the word in English. It's,
A book fair or a competition or something, or is it an award?
It's a book fair. Yeah, it's a book fair.
Okay.
It's a big book fair, and it's in Frankfurt in Germany. And I think that all book publishers and things, they all come over to the same halls there. And my publisher brought Homemade and showed it to some other publishers from Australia in the first place, from Murdoch. And they wanted to translate it, and then they divided it with Abrams in New York because of the distribution things and stuff like that.
Okay.
And so they took it on. Yeah. And it's going to be translated in German now. I just got the translations on email today. So that's really surprising. It's doing so well. You could imagine that I would never have expected this. I made it, you know, by myself in my own little room. And I was just doing the best I could, because I also put everything together, and I didn't know how to make books, so I watched little tutorials on YouTube.
I love it. That's awesome.
How to make page numbering in InDesign and things like that. So I watched all these little films, and then I could do it myself. So I put a whole book together. And so I thought, oh God, people are going to say this is a real terrible, terribly made book.
Well, I think it turned out anything but. I mean, it's really great.
I think that you can obviously see that I'm not a real graphic designer, but I think that's also the charm that it has. I like the way that it's not really, you know, it's a bit wonky, and I like it about that way. You understand what I mean?
No, the thing I think that makes this probably as successful as it is that it does have this. I mean, I don't know you beyond looking at your work and talking to you now, and we did a little interview, but I definitely feel like I know you better than I would know other cookbook authors just because you put so much of yourself into this into your book. Yeah. And I think that I found that just in my own work, sometimes the things I do for myself to just mm-hmm. like, if you approach a project and like, okay, what would I want in this? You know, yeah. what would I want? What would make me want to pick this up? And you do, yeah. and you stay true to that. And because sometimes, you know, people get into a relationship with a publisher and they're kind of encouraged to put things in or take things out that they really don't want to do. And yeah. that's where things start to fall apart a little bit, because if you're true to what you want and what is going to make you think a good book, you know, yeah. I think sometimes it's just going to be more successful if it's really true to form and what you want in a good book. And yeah. And I think you hit it out of the park, and I can't wait. I hope the, I hope the publisher will also, STC picks up.
They're talking about it. So I can't tell you for sure yet, but I know that they're talking about it because it's such a success in America that they want to have a follow-up. So
yeah. Now, is it doing better in America than it did where you live, or is this popular globally?
I don't know, because it's only out for about 2 months now three months, something like that, in the US, and it's been out for about a year now in Holland. Okay. But the funny thing is, it's going really well because now in Holland again, just because I think my new book just came out, and then people are, you know, talking about, oh no, I still don't have the first one or something like that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, congratulations. So I mean, I think that is just absolutely wonderful. And so you're making your third book.
I'm making my third. Yes,
And so you have, because you have this homemade book. Is the one that's out in the US. And then you did Winter, a book called Winter, and then another book called Summer. And those are just recipes that go by the seasons then.
Yeah, the much more seasonally books. And also that I wanted to make a big book again, but my publisher advised me not to and make two thinner ones. But then, you know, you can always put them together and then they'll be one book together. And also I could have more time to finish the second one. So that was nicer. So, and the winter book is also, they're both personal books again, but I tried to make the winter book more about Ireland, the place I grew up, and all the wintry food we had there. Not especially only Irish food, also Dutch things or traditional French things, the things I know well. And the summer book will be doing the same, but much more in France, much more French recipes, because I think the summer is much more Frenchy kind of, and we spend all our summers at the south of France. So I've got a lot of memories there, and I've saved a lot of recipes also who did not make homemade for just, I don't know, because they didn't fit in or something. So I still have a big pile. I'm trying to edit them all and write new ones and save up new ones and stuff like that. So yeah, the summer book is getting along really well. It's you know, it's hard to write books in a different season though. Yeah. I have to get a mood.
Right. Right. That is kind of challenging, I imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
This book I'm holding here is Mammoth.
Yeah.
It's like how many pages is it? Like 430 some pages, which just is, I mean, and some of them are full page photos. So you didn't have to fill words on every single page, but there are, I mean, this is a mammoth book, and this is, you know, tons of recipes. And then you were working on this book and also simultaneously doing you had your restaurant going, and I know you have people helping you with that, but then you also were you also doing design work too?
Yeah. I write for a lot of magazines. I work as a food stylist and also as a recipe writer for a lot of, you know, women's weeklies or monthlies or cookery magazines and stuff like that. And I have my own columns in some magazines online too. I try to do everything at once. So sometimes I'm really tired.
I can imagine. Well, how do you balance it all? Because sometimes like a paper cut, I imagine that you can't just whip one up super fast, because you have to, I mean, just the process, you have to cut slowly, otherwise you'll goof the whole thing up. But I mean, how do you balance all these things that you're doing?
I can sometimes shut myself down. I can shut everything down. I shut, I turn off my phones and I turn off Twitter and Facebook and email and things like that, and things that distract me enormously. And I can just, you know, just turn on a little radio or something and then work for hours on end, you know, for 14 hours on end. And I like to work like that way. But I have to get into a sort of mood. If I get, if I have a lot of appointments on a day, it's impossible to do artwork. I cannot only do these things if I get into a sort of mood, and then it builds up in my head, and then I just decide to shut everything off, and then I work for a few days, and I finish a lot in one at once. So it works. Yeah, I don't know. It works like that, I think. Yeah.
Well, and it sounds like often when you're doing recipes, you're often illustrating them. Is that often the case, that when you send in a recipe to a magazine, it's an illustrated, it's basically like a piece of art for the page? Because it's like an illustrated,
that's more illustrated.
And is that something that have you been doing? I know you said that you learned to cook as a small child following some of these types of things, and is that and I know that when we did the Q&A for the magazine, one of the things you had mentioned, and I think you mentioned this also in the foreword of your book, Homemade, you talk about how you used to collect recipes and kind of make your own recipe
cookbooks.
Yeah, you had your own little cookbooks that you were making. Were you illustrating things back then too?
Yeah, exactly the same, actually. And the shame is we have been moving so much that I don't have everything left. But my mom still finds things. And sometimes she pops up with, look what I found. And then when I see these recipes, I think, I haven't changed a bit. I haven't changed in 35 years, or, you know, when I was only 5 or something, I made the same drawings with these little arrows and put it in here and then heat it up. And then I made this, I think it was, you know, because I'm, you wouldn't say this, but I'm actually a lazy person. So if
I would definitely not say that, but
I think I really sound funny now, but I do. I am. So I put off work as long as I can. And if I need to jot a recipe down, I often make little drawings, because it saves me writing down, you know, put it on the stove and stir and blah, blah, blah. So if I just, you know, draw a little saucepan and a whisk, I know what I mean. So that's the way I used to draw recipes as a child. And I also have these little books left. I've got I just found my own Paddington Bear cookbook, which had a little party issue.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Recipes, I was really fond of it. All the pages are curled up, and I was very fond of the books of Angela Lansbury. She had Look, I Can Cook and Look, I Can Sew, these craft books. And these were all step-by-step sort of strips, kind of, you know. And I love those. They're all, you know, torn apart, but I still have them. These are, I think, my first inspiration, I think, for as a child, yeah.
Well, it's often the case that people, if they think back to what they really loved when they were 5 years old, it's funny, because I think a lot of us were working to gravitate back to what we were doing. Because I think kids know what they like. And I think as adults, sometimes we get led into, we have to pay the bills. And I mean, which is obviously a pretty big thing we have to do in life.
Did you know this when you went, you know, left high school and then went to study? Because I made, in the end, I never knew what to do. I made not a wrong choice, of course. Of course, all these things are good to do. But I found out what I wanted to do later on in life. And for you, did you always do this?
I always have. I started writing for newspapers when I was about 14. I used to work free, and my mom would drive me to my assignments, and I'd have her drop me off a little bit, like, so people wouldn't, it wouldn't be totally obvious that I couldn't even drive, you know? The funny part is I always was crafting and making things as from a very young age. And I never really looked at that as being something you could do professionally, or it was always like this side hobby. And it wasn't until I became a, you know, reporter and was writing about crime and violence that I realized I needed an outlet, you know, a way to, some people will pay money to a therapist and lay on the couch and talk about their issues. For me, that was not something that I thought was going to work for me. So I thought, you know, if you write about, you know, a terrible accident or something, a terrible story, it's like I needed a way to get that out of my system. So I got really into weaving. So I had a floor loom, I still do, and I would come home from work and I would throw my shuttle back and forth and weave chenille scarves, and You know, and it was one of those things where I didn't really make the connection, but I was doing that kind of, I wasn't weaving on floor looms when I was five, but I was crocheting and I was always trying to make things, and I never really connected that.
We did our own, you know, on cardboard boxes and things like that, we made our own little weaving things.
Yeah, and I think that it wasn't until I got older that I realized that, wait a second, I've been doing this all my life. I mean, this, it makes sense. And I'm just, you know, one of the things with cooking, do you find that it's challenging because there's so many cookbooks out there? Is it challenging to be original? Like, because you want to put your own spin on something.
I never thought of it that way. I never tried to get to be intimidated by other books. There are many books I really love and I think they are so great. But I will never try to make something better than that. I just make something else. And so that was my main idea. I mean, there is a lot of music has been made. And you can make another CD and it can be something else. And so that was the same approach that I wanted to do. I never tried to be better or different or no, not at all. No, not at all.
Do you have any advice for the people that might be looking to just finally kind of work cooking into their daily life?
You have to make time. It's not that you can say, oh, it's only 20 minutes. It's not. It's always going to be about a half an hour to get a decent meal on the table. But it can, for me, it's also very relaxing. If I'm really in a rush and I'm, you know, running off and running around and doing this and that, it's sometimes it's also very rewarding just, you know, just to peel some potatoes and pop them into a pan and cook some, I don't know. So for me, it's also a sort of the quiet moment of the day. Cooking is you know. So it's and if you are not intimidated by it and try, if you've never done it before, just get yourself some good books and read them in bed and get inspired and then you know what you're going to cook the next day. Pick up some groceries on the way home and cook them. You know, it can be very simple. Don't have to be a humongous chef to do things. You can just cook up something healthy and it would be, that's fine already. And in the weekends or when you have more time, just try to experiment, because it's so nice when you have done it and you can be really proud of yourself and say, yay, I can do this.
It is very satisfying. I mean, the cheese thing was huge. I mean, my daughter and I could tell that she was really kind of like wondering if it was going to turn out. And it might have been because I was wondering if it was going to turn out. And then when it turned out, we were like, wow, this is so great. You know, so everyone, my parents had visited that weekend. So I'm slicing this really kind of small piece of cheese, like, because we had already eaten some of it. So there's only a little bit left. And I'm making these tiny cuts of cheese for people to try. And I'm like, try this. I made it myself. And people at first are looking at me like, what? You made this yourself?
Really?
You know, and it's it was really fun. It was really fun. So I'm curious about just the culture in Amsterdam. Are people cooking? I mean, obviously your book is, you know, catering to people that, you know, want to give them ideas and inspiration. But I know here, you know, as I was saying, people are not always sitting down the whole family for a meal in the evenings. Are people better over there about just taking breaks and eating dinner together? Or is it pretty much a global thing where everybody's so busy and not really taking time?
Yeah, I think so. But it depends on what kind of people you're talking about. If people have little kids, they obviously will sit down on the table and eat with these children. I mean, a lot of my friends do. I don't know how everyone's doing this in Holland, but I know a lot of people are cooking again. People are a bit fed up of all these prepackaged food and things that you can pop into the oven straight from the package and you have no idea whatsoever what's in it and why the salad is still crispy after 3 days in a bag. And these are big questions in Amsterdam mainly. And I came over to New York in August to launch the book, and then I talked to a lot of people in Brooklyn, and they were all, you know, I thought it was very alive there too, that people are so aware of what they're popping into their mouth, that they feel horrible, you know, eating all this you know, food straight from a factory or something. So I think it's a movement all over that people are, you know, seeing that they are running around, and exactly what you're saying, that they're just driving through drive-throughs and eating unhealthy food. I think it'll take a long time for everybody to know or to, you know, actually take care of themselves. But I think it's getting through to a lot of people right now already. And in Holland, it's a bigger thing. Yeah. But Holland is a very small country. It's easier to to get this through the country.
Yeah, that's true. America, well, I know that here in, I live in the Midwest, and I know that here in Michigan, the farmers markets are becoming very, very popular, and people are trying to do more gardening and go get fresh ingredients. And it is a huge, it makes a huge difference, because you also just feel better. Like you said, I mean, you know exactly, if you're making the soup yourself, you know, and you're slicing up the, you know, the potatoes and all that stuff, and you know what's going in, you know it's fresh, and it makes a huge difference. I think people just feel better. So I think there's going to be more.
Of course I feel better.
So you're going to have a growing market for your cookbooks, you know, as this continues. You know, this only helps, you know. This is really fantastic. Now, I'd like to talk briefly about your paper cuts. And when did you start making the paper cuts? Because you have these, you know, a lot of times in, for magazines, you'll do a recipe and then you have a decorative, you know, kind of the illustration for the whole piece will be this paper cut, which is, they're beautiful and they're fun. And tell me how you got into that.
It's very easy to do because you've always got paper around. It's, you don't need an atelier or huge amounts of paint of stuff. You know, you can just, with one piece of paper, you're fine. I like to make my drawings first I make them first on paper, and then I put them together in Illustrator, and then I make a line drawing out of it so I can cut it out. And I often, and this is a bit, maybe it's cheating, but it's also, it makes it easier for me to do really fine work, because I bring it to a laser cutter and they cut it out for me sometimes. If I have to do bigger ones or things with a lot of thin, really tiny, teeny pieces of paper that break easily, you know?
Right. Well, it sounds like you've taken, you're practical about what you're doing. Because if you're sitting there cutting something out for 6 days and then trying to meet a magazine deadline and also work on books, it sounds like you
do it that way. Then there would be something like a sort of hobby kind of thing. And I have to finish three in a week. So then it's not possible to do that all together. And magazines will not pay for that time, I think.
Well, that's just it. I think that's very interesting that you would, because people would look at your work and maybe they don't know, oh, she used a laser cutter. Okay, that makes sense now. I understand how she could crank out, you know, three in a day, or, you know, that's, so that's something that, when you were going to art school, did they talk to you, did professors talk to you about how to be practical about your art like that?
No, not at all, actually. I had to do a lot of finding out myself, like, you know, how to sell things or how to make it profitable for yourself. And all these, you know, these are things that I've been struggling with for a very long time. And I know how to do it now. And I'm very happy. I even have an agent now who helps me make prices and things like that, because I'm still not very good at it. I always think, oh, these poor people have to pay. But I think that these are things that they don't really educate you with, at least in the schools I've gone to.
You do a lot, and do you have something that you like to do the most?
Yeah, a lot of people ask me this, but I could not say. And after 3 days of drawing, I get fed up with it, and I'm really happy I can write. And then I'm thinking, you know, I'm sitting in this room for days. I would love to, you know, be back into the kitchen again. So then I'm happy to be cooking in the kitchen, and I don't want to go back to the drawing table. So that's these things, you know, just with your moods and the time that you need. And so I'm happy I can do all these things, and I can combine them into these books. So this is something that I was so happy about when I found out with Homemade that I could actually do everything I like in one book. That was just for me, that was insane.
Well, I think it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful, because you've proven that you can do it your way and have it be popular. And that's excellent.
And I was really happy that my publisher really let me do everything by myself, make my own choices. He never influenced me at all, not even once. He was always, you know, cheering on the side and saying, okay, you're great. Just go on, get on doing it. And I would come back to the office sometimes and say, okay, I've got 100 next pages. Would you have a look? And he was always happy, so that was great.
How has your life changed? Because, I mean, I'm hearing about you in the United States, and am hearing some really wonderful things, and I had to go out and get this book and find out what all the buzz was about here. And I imagine that that's something that when you're collecting recipes and putting them into a box and having, you know, you and your husband are taking these photographs, it's probably, yeah. Did you imagine that that would happen?
No, of course not. Never.
And so now, I mean, do you get recognized by people? I mean, what is happening?
Yes, I do. And all these people I looked up to very much, you know, are asking me for interviews and questions and coming over and doing book signings and things like that. And yeah, my life has been pretty different from the past 2 years. Yeah.
Well, that is it fun? I mean, are you enjoying that?
Yes, it's fun. It's I'm still quite surprised, actually. You know, I don't want to sound over modest, but I was more that I was, you know, I'm just doing something I really like, and I get all this attention for it. It's really great, and I'm really happy that so many people have, like you yourself, are you know, trying things out, and I'm so proud that it really worked. And
it really does work. It does. Yeah. And it's so, yeah, and it's just such an empowering thing. And I think you've really hit the nail on the head, though, with what you're doing, because often people struggle their whole life trying to figure out, what am I supposed to do with my life? You know, what, you know, people are lurking for this sense of purpose. Mm-hmm. And often the most successful people I've interviewed often say what really was the key to their success is that they just started doing something that they really loved. And that resonates with people.
Yeah, and but it's very hard to find out what that is. I know this from my, you know, by my, because this happened to me too. I have been studying on and off for about 10 years, and not known with not a big purpose in life. Like I was always like, I'd like to do something with arts or crafts or drawing and cooking and designing, and I was not really sure, you know. And then sometimes, and then I don't know, so suddenly it all comes together, and you think, oh, okay, I'm doing this. This is what I wanted to do. So that's great. But I was very late in life, I think. A lot of my friends were all about 20 or something, that they were all studying things that they wanted. And I was, you know, running around like, I have no idea. I have no idea. I'll just go and draw in school, and no idea whatsoever. So I know this is very hard for a lot of people to find out for yourself, but it's there somewhere.
Well, and it sounds like, you know, for you, I mean, you said it was very late in life, but I mean, you're not that old. I mean, how old are you now?
Oh, no, of course not. No.
Yeah. How old are you now? You just had a birthday, right? Yesterday?
Yes, yeah. I'm 43 now.
Well, happy birthday.
You're the first person I'm telling it to, but
yeah. Well, no, I think that what's really awesome is that you're, I think, you know, when I turned 30, I feel like my 20s were like, I was just like this pent up woman trying to, I was kind of walking around like, is this it? Is this all, my life is going to be? And I was just really stressed and not really enjoying my job. And there's a lot that was kind of going wrong. And when I turned 30, I was like, I finally was starting to understand like who I was, you know, and be more comfortable in my own skin. And now I'm 35 and I feel like I just get more comfortable as time goes on. And so I think that for a lot of us, we're just getting started. You know, 40 is 40 is not old. And I think that, you know, people, you know, Oprah, when she turned 50, Oprah turned 50 and she said, this is awesome. And I believe her, you know, I don't have the resources that Oprah has, but I believe what she, you know, that for women, I think a lot of times, you know, if you embrace just your life experience, there's going to be so much awesome stuff that comes up next. So, I think it's wonderful to get to hear about your journey and how you've been able to figure out what it is you're supposed to do. And do you have other things on your list? Now you mentioned that art and craft, like do you also do craft projects on the side in all your spare time?
No, I'd love to actually, but I'm very, very fond of ceramics, and I'm always planning to do a ceramics workshop or something, but I simply do not have the time, but maybe it'll come next year or something. But for now, my life is pretty much planned ahead. So, and also because we move to Paris every week, it's very hard to go to a class every week if you're moving around so much. So I think I need to be in a bit more quieter surroundings or a quieter time in life. And I'd love to do ceramics. I'd love to make my own dishes and stuff. Because in the winter book, I started to draw on plates. You obviously would know. You have these markers that you can draw on plates, and you can bake them in the oven, and then you can put them in the dishwasher, which is brilliant. So this is something I really like. So I thought, if I can do recipes on paper, I can also write them on plates and cups and saucers and
that
stuff.
That could be a whole new marketing plan
well,
for you.
We put them into the new book, and I'm planning to make more for the summer book, because that was a nice thing to do.
Well, that's something that you could probably sell the plates if they could get an original recipe from you. And then also, that could be really cool.
Yeah, but I'd love to make the plates too. I like to do the whole project myself.
Yeah, well, yeah, and in your restaurant, you could serve your dishes on plates that you threw yourself.
Yeah, that would
and then
be nice.
Wrote on. Oh, this is going to be, yeah. I can't wait to see the product line that comes out of this. We had more hours in the day, you know, to do these things.
Yeah.
You're a wildly famous cookbook author now. And so I need to, I'm just happy that you had time for me. So thank you so much for that.
No, not at all. I enjoyed it so much.
A very special thanks to Yvette for making herself available for an interview. I really appreciate that and really enjoyed our conversation. You can head out and it's not too late to add a copy of Homemade to your Christmas list. And I think you will enjoy it. It's a fun book. Lots of photos. You know, I don't often get captivated like this by cookbooks, so this one really stands out. So I'd highly recommend it. Hope you also pick up a copy of the winter issue of Craft Sanity magazine. And I'm running it's a little special on that. You save $1 off the cover price if you order by Friday. So that's December 2nd. Yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff in the magazine. So there's knitting, crocheting. We have Tunisian crochet, embroidery, art journaling, even some printables, all kinds of fun stuff. So, and of course, cooking and baking, of course. So check that out. And I also want to thank my episode sponsor, Gay from Gay Abandon. I really appreciate your support. And once again, I just want to remind you to go check out the shop, gayabandon.etsy.com, where you're going to find a range of housewares from like hot water bottle cozies to coaster sets. And then also Gay and her friend Melanie make the arm warmers, wrist warmers, necklace scarves, and midriff warmers. So you can stay cozy and warm this winter. And they're based over in Australia, but they ship globally. So go ahead and check it out. And I noticed that they're running some specials, so you can head over and place your order in time for Christmas. They have some lovely looking items in their shop, so I think you'll be happy to check that out. If you'd like to sponsor an upcoming episode of the Craft Sanity podcast, as you've heard me talk in the past about, now that I don't have a day job, it's a little challenging to motivate myself to work really hard for free because I obviously need to be able to pay the bills. So what I want to keep this podcast free for listeners, because there's a lot of things that cost money in this world, and I want to give you something for free. So if you have a Etsy shop that you're looking to advertise, the advertising is pretty affordable, and that's one way that you can support the podcast. Also, you know, if you don't have anything to advertise, you just want to support what I'm doing, you can just buy a copy of the magazine or buy one of my weaving looms. All the money goes into the same pot to fund the Craft Sanity business that I have. So I really appreciate your support and all the great feedback that I've gotten. And thanks so much for your patience as I've been kind of trying to figure out how to balance everything that I'm doing and figure out what to do in the next phase. So I will talk more about that in the after show, about some of the latest happenings around here. And in the meantime, you guys know what to do. I have another show that's already recorded. I have some advertising support for the next episode as well, so I'm going to kick that one out. Look for that in probably about a week, and we'll keep these things rolling. So, and I have some great ideas for future interviews, so I'm really excited about that. And you know what? I miss this. When I don't do this, I feel like, you know, I'm missing something. So thank you for being a patient audience and for inspiring me to continue. I really appreciate that. Okay, so I'm going to sign off, and I'll save some other things for the after show. So if you want to keep listening after the music plays, you're welcome to. If you've had enough and you want to turn this off, I'll never know. So you choose how to spend the next few minutes of your life. either way, I'm going to be back soon with another episode of the podcast. In the meantime, craft sanity, my friends. It works for me. Hello, folks. Thanks for sticking around for the after show. I'm going to make this quick because I have a lot of work I need to get done by this weekend. I am gearing up for the Detroit Urban Craft Fair in Detroit. That's coming up December 3rd and 4th at the Masonic Temple. I'm really looking forward to this. I was born in Detroit, grew up in the suburban area, and I'm a sponsor of this event this year and really excited to meet you folks and teach you to weave on the peg looms that I make. I'm doing pretty much continuous demos all day. That's what I do with these shows, is I don't sit still, so I'm talking constantly and weaving. And I will have a lot of looms with me, so if you want to come up and learn, come on up and I'll show you what to do. And you might actually be able to show me something too. I mean, I hope that you bring show and tell, those of you who are heading my way that day. I'm out looking for projects and ideas and people to feature on my website and in the magazine. So if you make something that you want to show me, by all means, stop on down. And I really look at these as kind of this is basically a social event for me. I don't do the whole hobnobbing party scene. I don't work the room, but I do work the table. So I like to chat with people at these events. So come on up and tell me what you make. At the show, I'm going to have Weaving Looms, but I'm also going to have the latest issue of Craft Sanity magazine. So issue 5 will be hot off the presses. I'm actually picking it up tomorrow, and we'll be bringing it to Detroit for the show. So this issue of the magazine is, once again, packed with a lot of stuff. I always have minimal advertising, partly because I'm not so good at selling advertising, but also I really like to have as much content as I can possibly get in there, because one of my frustrations with magazines is that there's too much advertising in some of the other magazines that are out there. So what I'm trying to do is provide you guys with a option that's a lot of recipes, a lot of handmade Q&As, there's winter gardening, there's baking, holiday ornaments, art journaling, knitting, crocheting. We even have Tunisian crochet this time, some sewing and weaving and embroidery, and it's a lot of fun. And I got the chance once again to work with a very talented group of contributors. I could not have done this without them. So, and they're from all over the place, all over the globe. It's really exciting to get to work with such a diverse group of people. It's really quite an opportunity, and I cherish it. I think it's wonderful. Production was delayed a bit. I had hoped to have this out. Well, the plan was to have it out in November and much earlier, but the newspaper where my husband works, and I've been a columnist, and I was a full-time staffer before that, it's going through a traumatic reorganization, and looks like my husband is still going to have a job. We have not slept in a while. It's been stressful, but we are fortunate, it sounds like, because there are plenty of people who just flat out lost their job. So we are going to, you know, it's a pay cut situation, but we are going to make that work. And like I said, just count our lucky stars that there's still some kind of job with benefits in the mix. And of course, I was one of the casualties in this. I received a termination letter as I was already behind a couple weeks trying to just desperately get this magazine out. Got a letter that was just this form letter that came in the mail and said, you know, that my contract is terminated. And I think they did this for all the freelance writers, but there's no like call in advance, like, hey, heads up. Just kind of a you're done in February kind of thing. So, and I know how that's how it works, you know, in the corporate world. I mean, it's, you usually don't get someone, you know, coming and just kindly telling you these things. It's usually a pretty, you know, broad sweep, whether it's a meeting or a letter, whatever, however it's handled, it's usually not handled in a very gentle way. So, no one punched me in the face. I mean, so that's actually, I guess, a fortunate thing. So yeah, I am trying to kind of just wind things down. It's been a little frustrating because I tried to tell my readers in the first column after I got this letter that, you know, we only had 9 more weeks together, and it was edited. So it just sounds like a kind of a poorly written column. You know, it wasn't really clear to people why I was asking for their best ideas and why I was like, tell me now, you know, if you have something you've been sitting on. But what has happened in the wake of that is people have been sending me these ideas, and I've realized that I have material to keep going, so I am going to keep going. I don't think I'm going to be offered an opportunity to continue the column. I'm not going to bank on that because I think someone probably would have talked to me by now if that was a possibility. So I'm going to kind of move the party to craftsanity.com and also working on some kind of plan for my older readers who don't like to go on the internet or don't have the internet. Sometimes it's by choice that people don't like to read newspapers online, and sometimes it's just a purely economic thing, and I'm sensitive to both situations. So I'm going to try to figure out a way to still write about people who make things here in West Michigan and get that information to the people who want to have it. So haven't quite ironed all that out yet, but the wheels are turning, and I've never had a job in journalism that I've loved this much. I mean, I love writing the magazine, and I love the only newspaper job that I truly, truly loved was writing about art and craft. And so, yeah, I think that there's room to actually improve what I do and do this with a whole newfound passion and do it in a way that I'm not worried about getting canned because I'm not going to can myself. I might switch gears and do something else, but kind of eliminate that whole fear factor of it. So, I mean, I think the best is yet to come, and these things will work themselves out. You know, it's disappointing, but, you know, I never thought it was going to last forever. I mean, when I started writing it, it was pretty clear to me that this was a fleeting situation. It was a rare opportunity to be able to write about whatever I wanted, and it was so wonderful. And I'm going to just enjoy my last 8 weeks doing this and do the best I can, and then go on to the next thing and try to still write for the people that have supported me for several years now. So I think it's, you know, you can react to these disappointments in a couple ways, and I've chosen to respond positively because I really do believe that, you know, when something falls through, it forces you to reframe everything you do. So I think a lot of good is going to come out of these changes, as stressful as they can be when you're in the midst of it. But I know plenty of you at home have gone through career shifts, job losses, you know, other things that kind of jar you for a while. But I think anytime there's a challenge, there's also an opportunity to kind of pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and see what else you can do. So that's what I'm doing right now. One good thing that's already come out of this is a really excellent soup recipe, if I don't mind saying so myself. While I was feeling really like so much was beyond my control, I started making soup. And I came up with a little recipe that I published in the winter issue of the magazine. It's called Hopeful Soup. And I call it that because I was cutting up my vegetables and peeling my potatoes and kind of throwing things in that pot and just hoping, you know, that like each thing, each ingredient was like a wish, a way to like fortify my own belief that things were going to be okay. And things are going to be okay. And the soup is really good. So anyway, you can look for that in the current issue of Craft Sanity Magazine, issue 5. So like I said, I mean, I am all about making the lemonade if someone hands you the lemons. We're all going to be fine. And I am going to stop rambling now and get back to work. So hope to hear from some of you soon if you have some ideas for me. And thanks for listening.